Location, location, location. Caterpillars might not worry too much about the location where they spin their chrysalis, but the location Jesus chooses for this conversation with his disciples speaks volumes. Their movement to Caesarea Philippi comes just after Jesus learns that his relative, John the Baptist, was executed by the Tetrarch Herod. Jesus takes his followers about 25 miles north of the Sea of Galilee to this community at the base of Mount Hermon, and I want you to try to imagine what it looks like. So if it's comfortable, close your eyes while I describe it for you. Just don't fall asleep. Mount Hermon is actually a large range of mountains that today separates Syria from Lebanon. Its southern slopes extend into the Golan Heights. Mount Hermon is home to Israel's ski resort, which shares the mountain's name. One of the largest springs feeding the Jordan River bubbles up at Caesarea Philippi, so this region is lush and green with vegetation. The spring emerges from a cave, and there's a 30-foot waterfall. And not surprisingly, the cave and the grotto became a worship center. The Canaanites worshipped their god Baal at Mount Hermon. The Greeks worshipped the god Pan and built a temple there for him. Niches carved into the walls of the grotto once held statues of Pan and Pan's consort Echo and Pan's father Hermes. The community today bears the name Banias, a name derived from that same god of Pan. And let's remember that Pan is where we get the word in our language today for panic. And then in the first century of the Common Era, Herod the Great built a temple to honor Caesar at this same site, hence the name Caesarea Philippi, because his son Philip inherited the region from him and centered his administration there. This location is also a stop on a major trade route between Tyre on the Mediterranean coast and Damascus to the north and east. This garden paradise at the foot of the tallest mountain in Israel is surrounded by these testimonies to culture, economics, administration, and politics of Rome and Greece and older civilizations. This is the location Jesus chooses. If you close your eyes, you can open them up now. This lush and beautiful backdrop might remind us of the Garden of Eden. The dawn of creation, the perfect relationship between God and the created ones. In this setting, Jesus asks, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" It's probably not surprising to us that the disciples answer, "John or Elijah or Jeremiah or another one of the prophets." The job of a prophet is to speak truth to power. The books in the Hebrew scriptures from the prophets of Israel and Judah reveal time and again how they confronted their kings, condemning them for leading the people astray and putting the kingdoms at risk. While Jesus has been healing and preaching and teaching in his own time, he has also condemned those who are failing to live into the love and grace of God. He has called the Pharisees blind guides. He has accused them of placing more value on the rules than on compassion. He has pointed out on many occasions how they forget to show mercy. In the eyes of many, Jesus looks like a prophet. Even more than that, Jesus looks like hope. Elijah, Jeremiah, and the other prophets lived and died centuries ago. John the Baptist has been beheaded, but empires cannot erase hope, nor can they prevent God from bringing new life. God's salvation story is still being written. So what about you? Jesus says to his closest associates, "Who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter gives his confession, "You are the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of the living God." This setting in Caesarea Philippi, This backdrop of water flowing from ancient rock where multiple gods have been worshipped, this trade route where cultures and goods are bartered and sold, this center of administration and political intrigue, this is where Simon Peter pledges his allegiance, not to empire, not to economics, not to sentiment or to history, but to the living God. I don't know if there's an equivalent location for us today. Politically, maybe it's standing on the National Mall in Washington, looking at the beautiful monuments and the markers of U.S. history, and still proclaiming God is above all else in our lives, above presidents and politics and the events of human history. Maybe it's standing at the foot of Otsego Lake, where the headwaters of the Susquehanna River form, and praising the creator of every drop that has fallen and formed since the first drop on the first day of creation. Maybe it's Times Square, the crossroads of the world, where skyscrapers rise above the immense billboards hawking entertainment and clothing and perfume and lifestyle, all competing for tourists' dollars. And maybe it's us. Wherever we are, simply going through our daily tasks with God's vision and God's priorities in our thoughts, and allowing those to transform our actions. In 1896, Charles Sheldon published a book entitled In His Steps. The story begins in a railroad town in the Midwest, where Pastor Henry Maxwell meets an out-of-work railman. The man comes to the church seeking assistance, and first he's turned away. So then he shows up on Sunday morning, addresses the congregation about the lack of compassion shown toward folks like himself, men and women who are down on their luck, and the man collapses, and a few days later he dies. The pastor takes that opportunity to challenge the congregation. He invites them for the year ahead to ask before every decision, what would Jesus do? Sidebar, let me say this again. This was 1896. This was long before WWJD became a t-shirt or a bumper sticker. One of Pastor Maxwell's parishioners was a woman by the name of Rachel Winslow. Rachel was a gifted singer, and she was on the verge of launching a career as a touring performer. When she prayed, what would Jesus do? The answer she received was to choose not to perform on a world stage, but rather to sing God's praises every week in her church. A century after that book was published, contemporary gospel artist Cece Winans talked about the challenges of balancing faith and integrity in the modern music industry. Winans grew up in a home filled with musical talent, formed and shaped by the Christian faith. Cece's parents had their own recording career. Her four oldest brothers performed and recorded as a quartet. She and her brother Bibi have released 8 albums together, and on her own, Cece has won 15 Grammy Awards and numerous other awards, and she's founded her own record label. And she's quick to say that her faith is not a religion, but a lifestyle. The scriptures talk about lifestyle, she says. It talks about being holy. It talks about loving one another. And that ethic informs every part of her life, from the songs she chooses to sing and the artist she chooses for her record label, to the way she's raised her children. Cece proves it is possible in the 21st century to stand at the crossroads of culture and economics and still proclaim allegiance to God above everything else. And what about you, Jesus asks his followers. Who do you say that I am? Rachel Winslow and Cece Winans echo Peter in word, but more importantly, in deed. You are the Christ, Son of the living God. On this day when our nation marks Mother's Day and families celebrate connection, I ask you to consider, how does this family of God live its ethic? How does this community of faith support one another in lifting up the teachings of Jesus and living them every day? Where do we see the lifestyle of faith emerging in our lives, our homes, our community? Amen.